guest today is Jared Ferris. Jared, how are you?
I'm great. David, how are you?
I'm doing great. How was the conference?
So far, so good. It's been a lot of fun.
Your part's out of the way. You've already, or at least your presentation part is
right. Right, no more stress now.
So what did you talk about?
Today I talked about the F12 debugging tools that are used in all the modern web browsers.
Mm-hmm. Those are really cool. I discovered those years ago when Firefox had their Firebug.
Firebug, yeah. And it's just gotten better constantly.
And the browsers just sort of borrowed that idea.
They seem to be aggressively copying features from each other.
So you're a web developer yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What is a web? We call it the F12 tools because why?
Well, the Internet Explorer team named theirs that.
Okay.
But also in Chrome, you can open them with the F12 key.
Okay.
They're really web debugging tools and the dev tools. But F12 seems to summarize it pretty well.
So if you're a web developer, these are tools that would make your job a lot easier.
Right, and they're free. They're in all the browsers. All
right. What are the features of F12 that you use the most often?
The most common ones, which a lot of your listeners probably know about, would be inspecting HTML, changing style sheets. But a lot of the better or more powerful tools that I've started to use lately revolve around profiling, performance. Why is my page running slow? Why is my UI flickering? Why is weird events happening? So debugging things that you have a server side equivalent of,
okay,
they exist in the browser.
Well, give me an example of how you'd use the F12 tools to solve some of those problems.
Okay, so a really good one. I have a cloud computing conference, and our website was using a JavaScript plugin to minimize and expand speakers. So you have speaker boxes, and when somebody hits read more, they get the talk and everything else. And when you would load that on a mobile device, it performed terribly. And what was happening is every time you would scroll, these events were firing that were in the background. On a desktop, it's powerful enough if you didn't notice. So when I started to test on mobile, and the design was responsive, so it looked nice, all these things were happening. So I went into the profiler, started to record, started to resize down the mobile, scrolled, stopped recording. You could look at a timeline that had hundreds of events that were firing all one after another. You could look at those events and see, okay, what's triggering that? Oh, here's a line of JavaScript. Dig into that and say, oh, that's not going to work. You know, I was using a tool probably wrong, and I had to go change my pattern to do that.
Okay, so the profiling is really a recorder of events and actions.
Right, exactly. Layout rendering, JavaScript events firing, anything the browser's doing that uses CPU, I guess.
Mm, okay. What else? What other features do you use?
A big one that people don't all seem to know about, you can take minified JavaScript, which is that concept of shrinking the JavaScript down, shortening variables, taking out space so it's a smaller file.
Right.
And in all the modern browsers now, you can deminify that. There's a button, it's hard to describe, like curly brackets.
Mm-hmm.
You click that, and it will space out the JavaScript so it looks like functional, or like looks more like text. You can read through it, it has line numbers, you can put breakpoints in the line numbers. So it was once one line of JavaScript that was 20,000 characters long.
Right.
Now it's 2,000 lines of readable JavaScript.
Okay. It still has the short variable names, though, right?
It does. It'll be A, B, C, D. Yeah.
Right.
So another thing that I talked about today, source maps, they're something that all the browsers are implementing. They will take, when you compile your JavaScript down to minified, you can have your tool. I use Grunt for a lot of JavaScript apps, but whatever tool you're using.
What's Grunt?
Grunt is, a build tool. You heard of Rake for Ruby.
Okay.
It's a tool that will just do some of your build process. So one of the things it does is minifies the JavaScript down to minify JavaScript, I guess.
Okay.
When that runs, it'll generate a map file, which is a little bit of JSON that says, the source file I came from was this, here's the result, here's how you look stuff up. If you ship your source JavaScript that you had comments in, it looked like English or more like code,
yeah.
You ship the map file and you ship the minified JavaScript, the browser can work backwards. And so you can say, show me this in a human readable format, follow the source map.
Hmm.
And when it says, hey, I have a breakpoint or I have an exception on line 12, it can say, okay, in your original code that was line 32 and it was this function and it was called so-and-so.
Hmm, okay. So this is, when you say you ship it with, that means you store this map file somewhere on your web server,
yeah,
in the website?
Certainly probably your development environment. You may or may not put it in production, although it's harmless if you do. But it may just be extra fluff you don't want in production. So
okay.
On your debug environment, you would probably leave that. So your browser would load up the minified JavaScript that your HTML is pointing to.
Okay.
It would look for a mapping file. There's a little bit of a pointer that says, hey, look for this file. The mapping file says, here's where the source is stored. And since JavaScript source is not compiled anyway, it's served out, you're not trying to hide anything. So the browser will actually go follow that chain,
mm-hmm,
and then be able to show you pretty original source, even though it's actually executing this modified, minified source code.
Some people do try to hide their JavaScript.
Sure, and then you probably wouldn't.
It's a hard thing to do, though.
Yeah.
let me get my head around this thing here. If you go into F12 and you say, show me the source JavaScript file, does it just open the source JavaScript file instead of the Minify file, and you're looking at that, or are they somehow synced up?
You will be. It depends on the browser. So IE, Firefox, Chrome all support this. They all do it a little differently. But basically, you toggle whether you want to see source maps or original. And if you're saying, show me the source maps, or they might call it something different, you'll just be seeing the original source that's big and, you know, wordy. They will usually have a button to let you click into the minified, but if you make changes, they will kind of take them back and forth. So if you were to make changes on the fly in real time, it will keep things in sync. So to some extent. Generally what happens
is it will re-minify them? Is that what you mean by saying?
It depends. You can't modify the source code, but let's say you're in the console and you change the value of a variable.
Okay.
It's going to actually be changing the minified functional one. It gets a little weird. Generally, what you use is this to figure out what the problem was because you can read it. Then you go and modify it in your IDE, in your source, and let it compile through again.
Okay, I guess the most useful thing is that as I'm stepping through the code,
right,
then it would show me stepping through the more readable version,
right,
the non-minified
right
version.
But you're not going to really be writing the JavaScript in the browser. You're going to go back to your IDE.
I see. Yeah. Okay, all right. That is pretty useful.
It's way better than reading that.
I had tried to step through minified Java code and just sort of that box just bumps along a little bit from one A variable to the next.
And you're, yeah.
And I can't tell where the lines end.
So even there, if you download a third-party library and it's minified, the curly braces tool, the pretty print, I think they call it, mm-hmm, you deminify that. That gets you a lot of the way there because at least you can see the structures that are in place. Oh, that's in a for loop and it's looking for something and, oh, I can see what's going on. You know, you're probably not modifying their library code,
sure,
but maybe you're going to catch the thing that you did wrong.
I see, the assumptions that they made in their code.
Right.
Okay, very cool. What else?
It also talked about profiling today. So the idea of, we talked about recording timelines and playing them back. Internet Explorer has a tool called the UI Responsiveness Tool, mm-hmm, that I've just started exploring, but it has, it records what you're doing in the page. And the goal here is to kind of, you want to have a like 60 frame per second rendering of your page. You want it to feel kind of like when they do TV shows. I think that's that frame rate.
Okay.
So if you have a lot of JavaScript happening, animations, things sliding around the page, and it drops down, it'll become a kind of halting experience for the user.
Mm-hmm.
So it records the frames per second. And when you navigate through my slideshow, for instance, which is a HTML site, when I navigate through that, if it is running slowly, I can see why. And so then I can dive into, okay, when it dropped down to 10 frames per second and looked jerky, what events were happening, and then say, mm-hmm, oh, well, that event was happening because this JavaScript was slow and wasn't rendering well, and you can use that to kind of try to build a more, I don't know, graceful user interface.
Okay. So which events are causing it to slow down?
Right. Exactly. And then it might be acceptable if you're submitting a form, you maybe don't care if it slows down slightly. But if you're doing something fluid, you're doing it something HTML5-ish, you know, in a canvas, you want it to be,
sure,
really responsive.
Why have that animation? Or
if it's going to look terrible.
It looks terrible. Right. Right?
So those are really useful. All the browsers have some sort of memory profiling, which if you're building Angular apps or any sort of really rich JavaScript app,
mm-hmm,
and you're creating lots and lots of objects and putting them on the page and taking them off the page, it's pretty easy to get a memory leak. You're not letting garbage collection do its job.
Mm-hmm.
So if you run the memory profiler long enough and interact with your page, you can see, you take snapshots and pages using 15 megs of memory, pages using 30, now pages using 45,
mm-hmm,
and start to dive into, okay, what am I not cleaning up well?
Uh-huh.
That's really a big issue when you're using Angular, Knockout, Ember. It's harder to do that when you're writing a little bit of your own, but as you use these frameworks, it's really easy to cause memory leaks. And that slows, phones don't have a lot of memory. That really,
sure,
can hurt the mobile experience.
Yeah, I wrote down in my notes what we were talking earlier, is responsive. But,
mm-hmm,
what did you talk about with responsive?
So the biggest thing I showed off today, all the modern browsers have a tool where you can emulate a responsive or emulate a mobile device. So in Chrome, on the left-hand side of DevTools, there's a little cell phone button. Click that, it zooms out your web page, and it shows you what it looks like on different resolution devices.
Mm, okay.
So you can pick from a drop-down, I want to show an iPhone 4, I want to show an iPhone 6, I want to show a Nokia Lumia or something. And it'll change the user agent string, so it'll try to pretend it's that device, and it'll let you see, okay, you know, my device, my site looks great on the desktop on my high-res Retina display that's really wide. Does it work on the lower device? And you can resize that so you can see the different, you know, let's check tablet, let's check. And the Chrome probably does the best job. It has, I don't know, dozens of different devices in that list that it knows about. The other browsers are more of like pick the resolution you want, so you can still do it, but it's not really targeting a device. That's a huge tool. They also, Chrome and Internet Explorer have some tools in place for you to degrade the experience. So in Chrome's, for example, with Chrome, you can say, make this act like it's a an edge or a 3G device and not a 4G. And so that way you can see if you know, maybe your images need to be compressed or other things you're doing just aren't going to work well on a mobile device.
Okay. Yeah, some of them have the ability to degrade the browser itself, so you can go back to an earlier version.
Like compatibility mode
as well.
Document mode, that's starting to go away. So IE 11 right now supports document modes going back a couple versions.
Okay.
But there's some things on the IE blog now that kind of say that's the last document mode. So
is that because they just want to discourage people from writing to supporting those old browsers?
I think it's probably because every time they upgrade the browser, I think they're really having to rebuild like IE 9 again in the new browser, which seems probably like a very expensive thing to do.
Sure.
But I also think that the web's just not working that way. The standards are coming out quicker. Other browsers are constantly releasing. In Chrome, you'll load it and you'll get a new release. And
yeah, like every 15 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, the curly braces deminify thing, one day it was there and like, what's this button do? And you know, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so I think they need to get to that point to be able to compete. So I think the web is changing so much quicker than it used to that it doesn't make sense to lock into a two-year-old version of the web.
All right. So the browser manufacturers are actually putting pressure on web developers to not support those old browsers. I think it's probably what's
Yeah, that's probably fair. Happening. No web developer wants to support those old browsers, that's for sure.
Well, it's not that they don't want to support it. They just don't. It takes time and effort
right.
to upgrade your website.
You don't want to have to build it three times.
And right. it's easier to say, you know, this is an internal app. We'll just stay with IE 7 or something.
From the enterprise, for sure. The enterprise doesn't want to spend the money to upgrade something that's working. Right?
Yeah.
But a developer wants to build with the newest stuff. And they're using Chrome anyway. They don't want to have to use Chrome. Then also, it used to be 6. Now it's 9 is the pain point, right?
Okay.
IE 11 is much more like the modern one we're just updating.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that's just kind of the way that...
Yeah, IE's gotten a lot better since a competition appeared in the marketplace.
Yeah, yeah. They're still over half the market.
The reason 6 but... was the people complained about it because it stuck around for, what, 3 years?
A long time, yeah.
So...
And
there was no need for them to update.
There was the Microsoft even had that site, which was like the kill IE site, which was like, let's get rid of IE 6. That's changing. So now, and if you load IE 11 and you go down to your, you know, your version, it says Edge, and that's the, you know, the cutting edge. They're releasing new updates on a pretty frequent time scale. And that means they can ship out, you know, it used to be, I don't know how long, they released an update every 6 months or a year or something like that.
It used to be multiple years.
Yeah. And now it's, hey, we have a new tool. We can get it in your hands. A month later if they want to.
Right. Anything we haven't talked about that we should?
I don't think so, no.
All right. Jared, thanks so much.
David, it was great. Thank you very much. Yeah, one cool thing about the talk I did today is I used a framework called Reveal.js, which is an open source JavaScript framework for doing presentations. And what was a lot of fun about that is I can put it on GitHub and I can, you know, refer, another speaker told me about a new feature, I can put an update in there, I can mention that speaker, can push it out to Windows Azure, and it's live in the world. And so now, like, even producing your talks is kind of a collaborative effort amongst friends, and you can work with the same technologies you ship production apps with to do your talk.